You tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio. Hello and good morning. This is a very special time. It's a very special day. We're usually live on Wednesdays, but it's Friday at 11 a.m. And welcome to Direct Message with A Creative DC. We are live on Full Service Radio, broadcasting from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan in Washington, D.C. As always, I'm your host, I'm Morgan West. I'm founder and director of the A Creative DC Project. You've seen us on IG and Twitter. We're at A Creative DC, and we promote creative community and creative economy in the digital realm. So we have a 1.1 million strong hashtag feed on social, meaning that when you scroll through that content, you're accessing perspective on and from this city, from the people and projects who populate it digitally and IRL. So we work to shift perception of creative Washington, D.C., what that looks like, what's happening here, and we certainly could not do that alone. We're here to amplify the content that's going into that hashtag feed, and this podcast is just one of the new media ways in which we do that. So it's October 26th, 2018, and today's episode is actually presented in a little bit of partnership with DC Design Week, which is like this incredible annual happening in Washington, D.C. And while we're still, of course, fully centered in creative Washington, D.C., today we're taking a little journey outside of the city. And you know what? We do this every once in a while on Direct Message. I was talking to a friend yesterday, and we referred to the fact that D.C. is such a hub. It is a place where global and national things happen and where people come from all over, and not just in the kind of federal government realm, guys, in the creative world too. And we talked about that as being a home team advantage, right? So influence and experience are in this city every day. We'd be silly, we'd be missing opportunity not to embrace that. And, you know, we'd be silly just not to invite that onto our podcast, right? So today, home team, we have a very special guest. We are in studio today with Adam J. Kurtz, who you likely know, A, from the internet, and B, well, probably from the internet. You definitely know him as Adam J.K. So Adam is a designer, among many, many other things. To put it in his words, quote, "I call myself an artist because nobody has time for my multi-hyphenate reality. I'm a designer, author, illustrator, creative director, writer, small press, brand, three question marks." It's perfect. It's good, Adam. Adam is in town for DC Design Week. He just gave what I know was an incredibly well-received talk at the Miracle Theater last night. We're so thrilled to have Adam with us today to talk creative career, to talk about that multi-hyphenate lifestyle. We're going to talk about internet relatability and all of the things. Adam, hello. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. Welcome to DC. Welcome back to DC.
I was going to say welcome back. Welcome to my one of my homes. My parents live in Silver Spring, so I've
been
around.
That. Good. I love that. Yeah. So your parents are in Silver Spring, and then you're a graduate of UMBC.
Graduate of UMBC and a low-key graduate of Montgomery College Tacoma Park.
There you go.
I went there for a year, and last night was the first time I told someone that, and they knew what I was talking about. So it was a good feeling. I met another Montgomery College grad.
And, yeah.
We went out for drinks after, and she was like, "I went there too." I was like, "It's a good school."
Amazing. Yeah, it is. I know. It's so fascinating. And again, DC is his hub, man. Everybody, you end up back here all the time, whether you mean to or not.
I mean, it's the East Coast. It's honestly so small. And yeah. I think people from the West Coast have no understanding of, like, East Coast, within a 5-hour drive, we have like 6 major cities.
Truly.
And so that culture is just running up and down. You know, you've got like, I don't know about Boston. I have mixed feelings. But then you got New York, Philly, Baltimore, D.C. Boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom. Like right here.
Absolutely. Well, good. Well, we're glad that you kind of boom, boom, boom ended up here.
I can't believe I said that. I'm so sorry.
Listen, I'm with it. I loved it. But you're based in New York. You're in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. All right. Well, again, welcome back. This is super exciting. You've got DMV ties. See, it's all a creative DC. We're not too far outside of our bounds. All right. So you're here for DC Design Week, which is like amazing and so exciting. And I would love to. Can you just tell us what did you do? Talk to us about your Miracle Theater speaking engagement?
That was wild. So DC Design Week is, of course, it's a full week of design programming that touches on so many different elements of design culture because, you know, design is this huge thing that's constantly changing. But my talk was called Talking About Feelings and is a lecture that I've given, you know, several times now in creative spaces ranging from art schools to bigger design conferences. And what was nice about it last night at the Miracle Theater is that that is a very classic theater, originally built in 1909, as I learned, and, you know, red velvet curtains and the theater seats. And it was just like a very beautiful, intimate space to have this, you know, life talk masquerading as a design lecture. And so I think a lot of us in the design community have been to lectures before and kind of think we know what we're going to get. And I feel like it's my job to, you know, welcome to this. It's going to be completely different. And we're going to get really real for a second.
Yeah, I love how you just said life talk masquerading as a design lecture. I mean, I feel like there's some like neat analogy in there just kind of like for your work in general. It's amazing. Okay, so you said that this is a talk you've given a few times. And I actually love, you know, we were speaking before and you said this time you actually, you like started riffing real hard and you went like 30 minutes over you. Yeah. I love that you were feeling the spirit, but you're on the lecture circuit. So public speaking has now become like a thing that you do.
Yeah, it happened to me.
Yeah,
you know, I had done one or two little things, and then there is a really big design conference called OFF that the main one is in Barcelona every year, and then there's a couple others in other countries. I think there was a U.S. one that they don't do anymore, but they asked me to speak. And they have an emerging artists sort of stage. It's like a 200-person space. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I'm going to go to Spain for the first time. And I get there, and I just, like, didn't read the email right. And so I wasn't speaking to 200 people. I was speaking to 1,600 people. Mm. And, I mean, there's no better way to get over stage fright to just be, like, thrust into it. And I did have a literal panic attack, and I took, like, 30 minutes to breathe facing a corner. I listened to Michelle Branch. That's my like recentering music. And then after that, I was like, shit, well, I can do anything.
I would imagine. That's a big surprise.
It was horrifying. Like, that's not a flex. Like, it was really scary.
Yeah.
I had no reason to expect that I would be on that bigger stage. And this conference brings like the professionals from all over Europe. Like, it was so scary. And my slides malfunctioned. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
And then since then, you know, I think because that's a higher profile thing, people have invited me to speak. This year I spoke in India, in the Philippines. I spoke at three big conferences in the States, How, 99U Conference, and Adobe Max. And it's weird. I guess this is like a thing I do now.
It is. Well, it seems to be kind of like a natural response to visibility, right? And so you've been working on the internet for 10 years minimum. Yeah.
Something like
a decade-ish, whatever that means in internet speak.
But 10 years on the internet is like a million fucking years.
I know. Well, you look good. but yeah, it's just so funny. It's in, honestly, I think a lot of times with internet visibility comes, you know, kind of like this, it's immediately going to translate, right? Like, it's immediately going to translate to real life. But I mean, beyond the kind of speaking to 1600 when you thought you were going to speak to 200, you know, have you kind of like invested? This is me asking as someone who's had to do public speaking, not by choice. It kind of happens to you. And I have to laugh because I have to share the very first time I did any kind of public anything, I started to drive to the wrong place and realized after I'd parked that I was at the wrong museum.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was intense. And then also I thought I had to be, I think, different than I was. Like, I thought I had to be like more of like an expert, right? So I had like all of these like facts and figures that I had like Googled, and like they were wrong. Like, I presented the wrong information. So I guess my question is, selfishly, I would love to know, you know, do you ever struggle with that? Like, obviously you have really, like, I think your niche has just kind of been like being Adam JK, like being Adam on the internet and figuring out ways to translate that and make it relatable. Was there a learning curve for doing that in this very different medium?
I think yes and no. Part of what I try to do with speaking, and again, I know that we're not going to spend the entire podcast talking about public speaking and the design scene in general, but you know, design and public speaking design conferences often feel very sort of like straight cis white dude. And, you know, I'm a cis white dude. And so that sort of gets me in the door. Mm. And then I had this moment where I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to be like the one gay, I'm going to fuck it up a little bit. And so after that, you know, the first time I was not really thinking about anything. I think I was who I was just because I can't help it. But after that, I did start thinking about like, okay, well, I know how I got in here. I know that there are some issues. I know that things aren't being discussed. I know that in some cases, the people on the stage do not accurately reflect the people who are in the audience. And that's a mess. So I'm going to start saying stuff. And so I have over time made a conscious effort to make jokes, basically to make jokes at the expense of straight cis white dudes in the space. And sometimes it's fun.
It's
and
a good
sometimes
2018 life philosophy, frankly.
Yeah, kind of, right? I quickly realized that I was being pegged as like the queer speaker. I was like that checkbox for some people. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to subvert the hell out of that.
Yeah.
And so if anything, it's not that I am performing like a more polished version of myself. I think I'm actually performing like a gayer version of myself. Like in real life, I don't talk about Ariana Grande constantly, but in the lecture, we talk a lot about, we dissect pop music. We talk about, yeah, I almost play it up because I think that visibility is important for some folks. And
it's a responsibility.
And just like super, super quick anecdote. I mentioned that I didn't read that email properly. I don't always know everything. And so when I spoke in the Philippines, it was me being super fucking gay. And I didn't quite realize that culturally things are very, very conservative. And that resulted in a lot of very tender and touching moments after with people who were in the audience who had really just like did not expect to see themselves reflected in that space. And largely do not feel like it's okay to be exactly who they were. And there was just like, there were several moments, but there was one where it got me and I just like burst into tears at the book signing line. There's like photos of me ugly crying with the like, you know what I mean? So yes, I'm not 100% my normal sitting around my apartment self on stage, but I think that that has merit. I think it's important. And I think any of us who represent a particular identity, like it's our job to represent.
Absolutely.
Like what else can we do?
So you've kind of figured out who you need to be during these engagements.
Just skipping a few steps and sort of putting it all out there because, you know, you have 30 minutes to an hour with people and you can't assume that they know who you are or that they're doing their research. You know, it's not their job. It's your job. So I just try to do a good job of that.
I love that. Well, that's amazing. And again, congratulations on last night.
Thank you so much.
On your 30 minute surplus. I've heard from multiple people it was amazing. So congrats on that. All right. So guys, if you're just joining us, this is Direct Message with a Creative DC. I'm your host, Morgan West, and we're in studio today with Adam J. Kurtz, a.k.a. Adam J.K. He's an artist and designer who lives a multi-hyphenate lifestyle. He's also someone who feels, you know, the deep sense of responsibility that comes with visibility and comes with, you know, kind of the opportunity to talk about who you are and what you do in front of people. And so let's talk a little bit about what it is that you do. I love this. I lifted this from your IG bio. You're like, I'm doing whatever they let me do.
Yeah. I mean,
I love that.
Honestly, that's what it feels like half the time. It's sort of like what are the, and again, they in quote, you know, like what are they letting me do? So I started as a traditional graphic designer and really have shifted into, sorry, I have like a small cough in my throat.
Great.
What an authentic experience we just shared.
Live.
Thank
it's
you
so
for
real.
Engaging with the physicality of myself. You know, I started as a graphic designer, which really is just learning the tools, right? You're learning the software, you're learning the hierarchy of how to communicate information effectively and maybe the history of where things have been. Once you know those tools, you can do fucking anything. And so I have really shifted into an author role where I was doing illustrated journals, which led me to my most recent book, which is actually a handwritten essay collection. So I'm writing, you know, the words are now mine, the images are mine. I'm no longer combining a client's text with a client's image or there's not a copywriter giving me, you know what I mean? It was like, I had been doing that for work. I was working in a marketing firm. I was working in traditional advertising, worked for a media website, all the while doing my thing without any rules. And now that's all I do. Now all I do is self-directed projects. I have several books with Penguin, stationery line. I just put out a tarot deck because I just wanted to do that, so I did it. And I have a product line of like gifty stationery souvenir stuff that I self-produce and distribute. And then I have done like housewares collections with Urban Outfitters and Fishes Eddie. And again, it's like someone will come up to me or email me rather and be like, hey, can you do this thing? And I'll think about it. And I'm like, maybe. Okay, let's try.
I love that. You know, I was reading one of your past interviews in Adweek, and you were saying, I don't think I know how to make a book that's just a book. So I love that quote. But I mean, even to kind of dive into like, yeah, you're like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to do that. Like, you know, I don't just want to type up my words. I'm actually going to like hand draw them out myself. And, you know, a lot of your books are, and again, this is just, I think, so indicative of just kind of the brand that you've built. Like there's something to interact with. There's something to add your own to. There's like, you know, you're interpreting it and you're actually asking people to like pick up pens and pencils and like make the books their own. So, I mean, what is that? I mean, this is almost like a kindergarten question, but it's just like, I guess what, because your advice for creative entrepreneurs, I mean, when you're kind of entering a project, like when was the first time you really like signed the permission slip for yourself to like bust through the wall and like explode all of the kind of pre-imposed confines that either were or weren't there?
That's like a very generous, I feel like you are generously retelling the story of what happened. I mean, my first book, One Page at a Time, is an interactive journal. It's published by Penguin, the same imprint that put out a book called Wreck This Journal. And Wreck This Journal is sort of like an art journal that you interact with. And it has sold millions of copies worldwide and made the imprint and Penguin a lot of money. And so they were like, cool, let's just try to replicate that many times. And so I truly benefited from someone else opening the door on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when my book first came out, it was released first in Brazil. They rushed it out there because of, I don't know, book culture and a big book fair. And they just marketed it as like, for fans of Wreck This Journal, here's another one.
Oh, and so fascinating.
So it had absolutely nothing to do with me, but it was a Brazilian bestseller week one. And it has gone on to sell like 120,000 copies in Brazil. And it has nothing to do with my talent or ability. It's really just timing and positioning and the fact that someone else opened the door. So I'm not like a particularly smart genius. And I think it's really important to own up to that. And I know this isn't really exactly what you asked, but like success is about so much more than talent. It's not that I'm better than everyone else in the world. It's timing and it's positioning. It's the work of all these other people. Sometimes it's a mistake. But going back to your question about making books that are interactive or books that aren't books or putting out an essay collection that's handwritten and perforated that you're supposed to tear to pieces and pass along in real life to replicate social media sharing, what I realized is that I make things that are nice and good. You know, I am not a genius. I'm not creating masterpieces. My work is not in the MoMA or whatever. But when you put your mark on something or when someone who loves you gives you something, it becomes more valuable. So the book costs $15, but if your mom gives it to you, well, now it's worth an infinite amount of money. Or your best friend tears a page out and gives it to you. That's a piece of paper. You know what I mean? Like I bought a coffee and I got a receipt. That's a piece of paper too. But this paper that a friend gave me that has a message on it is worth whatever, so much. And I'll hang it on my wall for 5 years. So I'm always thinking about how can I make something that is ubiquitous special? And how can I create work that's designed to be gifted so that it can pick up that emotional weight or that people can fill it in themselves and then they're going to cherish it forever. And then it's going to become powerful for them and help them manifest their goals or dissect an insecurity or otherwise just sort of reflect on what they're going through. So I'm making tools for other people. Who I am is largely irrelevant. You know, I'm not the one making them special, but hopefully you are.
I love that. And success is about timing, and definition and value is based on context. I love that. Thank you, Adam. Yeah, I mean, I really feel like, you know, and again, you are also the author of advice for, you know, a whole book of handwritten advice. And, you know, I think, you know, just basically your career, we talked to so many people on this podcast whose careers have basically kind of been building blocked together, and in hindsight, like, the arc may still not make sense, mm-hmm. but so much of it is kind of based of, I'm gonna refute you on this. It is based on talent. You are so talented, of course. But it's so fascinating how every single person kind of look back and almost take themselves out of it, and just, there's an arc there that exists. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that I'm not talented. I think I'm very good at the thing that I do. But I think I just don't want to, like, believe that too hard, because part of, especially with the public speaking, part of speaking in design conferences and spaces is that I meet really talented people all the time. And truthfully, everyone is so talented. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think it is more than that. It's more than talent. We need to remember that, because there are just great, extremely talented people everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't always know about all of them.
One of the tenets of, like, the Creative DC project is kind of, like, to democratize visibility. Like, just, you can opt in and, like, you're part of the group, right? Like, that's it.
I mean, that's the genius of it with the hashtag, is that, like, everyone can participate and be found. And that's something that, you know, that democratization of it and the community building, like, those are new things that we didn't have the tools to do so simply and so accessibly, you know, just a few years ago.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I just feel like, and then to kind of go back to DC Design Week, you know, I think the tenet this year was, you know, design is for everyone, and just really kind of making sure that there's space. Anyways, I do love what you're saying. It's so fascinating. It's kind of like, especially when you have reached kind of like a level of visibility where you're like, yeah, you're backstage at, like, the Adobe conference, and you're kind of like, I mean, that's fascinating. You've really, I mean, it's interesting. How do you stay centered? How do you stay centered? How are you not just like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. Cause I feel like,
I know what you're trying to say.
Help me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very Jewish. And so by nature, I'm wired to be self-deprecating. So it's hard for me to really believe in myself too much. Because there's a tiny voice in my head that's constantly reminding me that I'm, like, fat, ugly, and dumb. Just like, you're a piece of garbage. Everyone hates you. I mean, I walked into the line yesterday, and some really talented creative folks were leaving after an event. And I was just looking around, and I was like, Adam, you are too dumb to be here. You just go for a lap around the block. Come back when all these cool people are gone. You know, there's, like, a low level panic and just, like, self-loathing that courses through my veins. And you have to laugh about it.
Right.
Because what else can you do?
What else can you do? Otherwise, it's going to take you down.
But it does help in some ways. I mean, sometimes it's terrible, and that's not how to be a healthy person. But I would rather be a little bit unhealthy than be an unbearable asshole.
I love it. I'm putting that on a fucking plaque and waving it. A flag? Waving it from the roof?
Okay, deal.
Okay, perfect. All right, thanks.
Tune in next time as we wave flags from the roof of the beautiful Line Hotel in Washington, D.C.
No one wants to be an asshole. All right, Adam, thank you so much. That's amazing. Okay, so this feels like a really good time to take a break. We're all going to, like, kind of revel in our own self-loathing here for the next few minutes. We are going to take a super fast break. Again, I'm Morgan West. We're in studio today with the incredible Adam JK, who is just, like, dropping little gems of honesty all through the last 23 minutes. We'll be back in a few. We're going to talk about some more stuff. I got to reorganize during the break. This is why we do this. Thanks, guys. Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is Direct Message with A Creative DC. We've got a special kind of DC Design Week thing going on right now. We're in studio with Adam J. Kurtz, aka Adam JK. He is the author of books, he's an artist, he's a designer. He's had some, like, incredible clients. He does work for himself. He just did a tarot deck for the sake of wanting to do a tarot deck, and I have so much respect for that. Adam, amazing. All right, so we're going to jump right back into it. And I think this is kind of the perfect segue after our last conversation. Adam, you have really built a platform on honesty and accessibility and humor. And like, frankly, I think that a lot of it comes down to relatability. Part of the reason I love your work so much is because there's a sort of like reframing of things that should maybe be obvious, but like aren't a lot of the times. And I actually love what you said. You're like, you know, he was refuting his genius earlier, but he, you know, I think part of like the brilliance of your work is in its simplicity and is in kind of like the fact that there's like basic lessons in there. It's what you do. I'm gonna be annoying. It's a little bit of a revolution of universality. This is what I wrote.
Damn.
I began an essay, apparently.
Wow. But I'm trying to hide behind the microphone. I can't make eye contact with you because I'm blushing.
Well, good. And it, really, it's all about kind of we're all in the same boat together. So I don't really know what my question is here. But I mean, I think you're somebody who's connected with the audience. Again, you've been working online for like a decade plus. And, you know, you've really kind of grown. You've grown audience across multiple platforms. So, I mean, what's your day to day look like? How often are you engaging with people? Do people feel like they know you? Do they know you? What's the what?
That's a lot of questions. That's like that wasn't a question so much as a mood.
Yeah.
We've like moved on to like this period of the talk.
This is it.
You know, I've been making and sharing stuff online for, you know, as long as I can remember. I started building fan sites that were not very good. And then I joined Zanga and LiveJournal, which I still have my LiveJournal, but I'll never tell you what it is.
Oh, I love that.
I was on MySpace and started, I was selling little buttons when I was like 17. Like I've just been on the internet making stuff and being myself for such a long time. And I think I'm like sort of the last, I'm from like that, I just turned 30 last week. I think I'm like from that last group of people who were online right before social media and then saw that hit. You know what I mean? Like now we've got like teens on YouTube who are saying fucked up stuff that in 5 or 10 years they're going to be mortified by.
Yeah.
And
I think about that a lot.
I do too. Yeah. And I'm so glad that like message boards that I was on are gone now. You know what I mean? When I was like figuring out what gay meant and like talking to like older gay people on like the Alanis Morissette message board. Like what do these feelings mean? You know what I mean? I'm so glad that that's gone. And now... The kids don't have that benefit.
No, everything is a permanent record.
The internet's forever. And so I feel like I learned how to be an honest version of myself without sort of projecting too much, but also how to keep secrets for myself.
Right.
I feel like right now you either have like total fake bitch, like green juice, bleach blonde, like aspirational personality, or you have like super confessional, like gutting myself for likes. And that's neither of those things are healthy and neither of them are true either.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there, it's very dangerous to be all the way in that up high space and all the way in that bottom space. So I try to stay firmly in the middle, maybe a little low. That's just cause I have sort of like a low level depression that courses through me at all times.
It just keeps,
sorry,
keeps
what was
there.
The question? Do people,
no,
feel
no,
like
there wasn't one.
You know what? People do feel like they know me. Which I think is really nice. But then sometimes it's weird. People do kind of know me because I think I am consistently who I am. I love when I meet people and they're like, you're kind of exactly what you seem like. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, but I'm taller, right? And they're like, yes, sir, Mr. Kurtz. But sometimes that comfortability does manifest in interesting ways because people will tell me very heavy things. Like I'll be signing books and someone will whisper something in my ear or say something just very quietly that is extremely personal and heavy and maybe about how one of my journals helped them or just how they saw something of mine and it helped them on a day. But I do have to like keep a straight face. You know what I mean? Because really early on my first book tour, someone said, you know, I have this thing that you made hanging up in my car, hanging from my mirror. And a few weeks ago, I thought about driving off the road. And that was like the thing that stopped me from doing it. I used to make a little award medal, like a Olympic medal. And it said, good job at still being alive. And it was created as half birthday, half don't kill yourself. Like it, that was the message. But IRL, to have someone say that to me at like a party, threw me off. And so I have learned to like keep a guard up to really appreciate that vulnerability that people are getting from my work that I am putting there. But then also being sure that my work can support that, and then also like my physical human self can support that too, because I want people to be able to be real like that. But it can be difficult, and I'm not a therapist. You know what I mean? I'm not a licensed therapist, which I wrote on the back cover of one of my books, because I made a. I mean, Pick Me Up Journal is very heavy and very, very real. But yeah, I'm not a therapist.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of goes back to what you're saying, just about like context kind of, you know, is something that can be imbued. And like, really, again, I think it just goes back and is another example of the universality of your work. It's like, it really can affect different people at different times. And gosh,
I think if you're being honest about something long enough, people understand it to be your truth. And so, you know, there's a lot of like trendy self-care, and I don't think that that always connects. But then there are also people that we trust or respect online who have been talking about their issues and the way that they cope for a long time. And then when they make a suggestion or say something vulnerable, we believe them. You know what I mean? They're not just selling like one of those like overpriced like facial massage rollers.
Sure. The green juice.
Yeah. I really want one of those rollers. I keep mentioning them. I'm hoping that like Goop will sponsor me.
Yeah.
Like at Gwyneth Paltrow, can I have a roller, please? Can I have a jade egg? I don't know why. I just want one.
No, you don't. No, yeah. No one needs the jade
egg. I mean, I have nowhere to put that. I just want to put it on my shelf.
I'll hold it for you.
Ooh. Okay. Welcome to the...
B-side.
Direct message after midnight.
Oh my God. All right. Well, I love what you said about kind of there being people on the internet who you trust and who you listen to and you respect. And, you know, again, you're someone who really has been kind of putting the work in on kind of living a truthful life online. And so that's actually, thank you. Like, perfect segue. Well, let's, you're somebody who people trust. So I think you are somebody who, you know, again, kind of going back to the public speaking, you're somebody who is able to kind of like have some visibility. And so therefore, kind of like when you talk about these bigger issues or when you talk about these things that need to be talked about, you're in like a very good place to actually like affect people. So one of the things that you spend a lot of time on, you're really kind of driving and leading these conversations among and for your peers around ownership and credit of content in this like digital era. So can we just dive into that a little bit and kind of, you know, I know you talk about this a lot, but how did you get started as kind of like a, for lack of a better word, you're like a spokesperson for kind of in the digital era?
I don't feel like a spokesperson, and I don't feel like an activist for artists' rights either. Like, I think those are labels that people have put on me more recently. I think I'm just someone who speaks about my experience a lot. And so when my experience has been major brands or other artists lifting my work or directly copying it or just printing it on merchandise without permission or licensing or copyright, you know, without the rights, I say something about it. And so the last few years, it's happened more and more where I just like, I wake up and I'm like, oh, there's my art on something. You know, I was upstairs in one of the Line DC's wonderful beds, so comfortable, highly recommend staying at this wonderful hotel. It's actually one of three locations.
Yes.
But I was on my phone and someone had collaged some of my art into a photo of them wearing a sweater in a paid social media ad for the sweater company. That happened 4 hours ago. And so I'm already emailing the sweater company like, hey, you paid someone who used my published copyright work in an ad for you. And it's your responsibility to make sure that people that you contract are doing the right. Like, it's just, it happens all the time. And it's so... it happens so casually on social media because people are like, oh, Instagram, it's just an app. It's in my pocket. If a newspaper or a magazine prints your work without your permission, that's literally illegal. And if that same magazine or newspaper puts it on their website, that's illegal. We understand that. But somehow there's a disconnect of if the magazine runs your art on their social media feed, somehow it's just Instagram. But they're... most of the time, a brand's Instagram is their most visible outlet, their most traffic, their highest levels of engagement. So if anything, that should be the most sort of offensive misuse of artists' work. So I have gone after people before. I, you know, this is what I do full time. Sometimes I just have the time to go for it. I have tracked companies down. I have invoiced people. I had a dating app kept posting my work, and I got an apology once, and then almost a year later they posted the same work again,
And again, brands are building their social media audiences by just curating, you know, quote, curating feeds of inspirational content.
Yeah, my favorite is via Pinterest.
Oh my God. Brands love to say that they found it on Pinterest. Pinterest is an image aggregator, not a content creator. And so I invoiced them for, you know, $1,200 and they paid my invoice. And then 2 days later, they posted something else of mine. So, you know, it just keeps happening. But there's cases like that where it's just social media. And I know some people listening are like, whatever, dude, it's Instagram, get over it. But I've also had my work stolen by international companies. You know, there's one very big case that I'm not legally allowed to talk about because there was a resolution. But I'm happy to tell you that Forever 21 stole my work because they never responded and I was never compensated. They were selling t-shirts with my art on them. So that happens too. I think when you make things and you put them on the internet, things happen. And a little bit of a sidebar for anyone who is familiar with my work. And if you're not, after listening to this, you can look it up. It's very simple. You know, the illustration style is simple line art. My handwriting is also sort of disarmingly simple, and that's intentional. I want people to find themselves in it, and I don't want it to feel so intense and polished that you can't trust it. But the flip side of that is that people seem to think that it's ownerless. And we see that a lot with like Pinterest quotes, with Tumblr aesthetic, and I'm using air hashtags. For some reason, that like Tumblr aesthetic or Pinterest quotes, people seem to think that that's like free domain. And I honestly truly believe that that's rooted in ageism and sexism, because this like teen girl aesthetic is somehow free. Like, oh, it has no value. It's just a teen girl's doodles. It's like teenage girls have agency. You know, if you love a teenage girl's illustrations, you can commission them. Yeah. You know?
God, that's so fascinating. And it really does kind of come back again to it's like an unfortunate risk of creating work that people do feel such deep attachment with is kind of a byproduct that maybe you didn't see or like were not ever possibly able to foresee. Was like blatant misuse and kind of like, no, I own this because I feel it in my heart.
I don't necessarily know that that's always like, I mean, I hear what you're saying too, and people do connect really strongly. But what I have found overwhelmingly is that people do respect what I'm doing, and the people who care about it really care about it. And so those are people who are seeing it maybe posted by a brand and commenting, hey, tag this person. Like, you know, Lena Dunham posted something of mine like 2 years ago, and she had like 40 comments that were like, tag Adam JK, tag this person. And, you know, she became a fan and has posted my work since. And she posted a keychain over the summer, and I sold 700 keychains in a morning.
Wow.
It was like, good things happen as a result of these conversations and as a result of the people who really do care.
Yeah.
But there will always be big companies that just will do whatever they can.
Right.
Try to get away with stuff.
Well, I think that's what's so interesting to me. And I think kind of like the crux of bringing this up is I think the important part is there's like so much education still for like whatever reason that has to be done in creative industries for like people to like respect or companies to respect. And, you know, again, the positive side of people really connecting with your work is then you do then have these people who are like motivated and connected enough to kind of speak up on your behalf when these things kind of occur. But, you know, I love what you said about, you know, you're not, you know, being called a spokesperson and being called like a, you know, an activist for artists' rights is something that kind of other people have assigned to you and not necessarily something you would say about yourself. But I think, you know, as we kind of head towards wrapping this up, one thing that just kind of started flashing in my mind was just individual perspective is the new expertise, right? And I just kind of feel like that is such, you just occupy such, I think, an interesting niche in the design and the art world and in the internet world too. And again, it's really, it's all based on, I just think your work has such like a sense of perspective and truth to it. And I just, thanks for making it.
Thank you. I mean, I don't know what else to do. I don't know how else to communicate. And so it's hard for me to take credit for something that just feels like who I am and how I speak. But I'm learning to, I'm learning to understand that the way I communicate is not how everyone else communicates. And for the people who align with my brain, you know, whatever 4% of people in the world out there, that can get it, that it can be something. And I think, you know, as we're wrapping up here, that can be a lesson for all of us who are creatives, who are listening to this right now, is, you know, our thing is not ever for everybody, and it doesn't have to be.
And I let go of trying to please everyone, and I let go of trying to make the most sellable, versatile, digestible work. And I started just making stuff that I liked best. And if I want to make an entirely pink tarot deck and possibly alienate men or people who hate pink, I'll do it. And it's okay. The people who like what you do are more than enough. And I think we need to trust that.
That's yeah. Perfect. Adam, thank you so much. Thank you for ending with that. That was needed. Thank you. I appreciate it. So Adam JK, thank you for being here in Washington, D.C. Thank you, D.C. Design Week, for bringing Adam here to us to expound upon his Adam JK-ness. Adam, we hope you have the best rest of time in D.C.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, and don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast, and please rate it on all podcast platforms.
Listen to that. Thank you.
Engagement and reviews. That's like how to best support the creative work that we love, because this shit is free.
You're so right. You're welcome, everyone. No, I'm just kidding. Adam,
no, you're
thank
not.
You.
It's real.
No,
it's real.
I'm not.
This is your creative labor, and it's very appreciated. So thank you, Adam, for having me here.
Thank you. This has just been delightful. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, as always. You can follow along with A Creative DC on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at A Creative DC. And we're online at acreativedc.com. This project would not exist without perspective outside of our own. We're so grateful to our weekly guests. Adam, thank you again. And we're, of course, so grateful to take these weekly dives into the A Creative DC hashtag feed and beyond. Thanks to our partners here at Full Service Radio. Alexia, thank you for producing today. You can follow along with them at fullserviceradio.org, at Full Service Radio on Instagram, and at Full Service RDO on Twitter. Until next week, I'm Morgan West, and this has been Direct Message with A Creative DC. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.